Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a talk by two Sudanese refugees, Christine Ross and Sabit Bolas. They'll be joined by Lacey Studnicka from Lutheran Family Services, the largest resettlement organization in Nebraska. The title of their presentation will be Challenges of Relocating from the Sudan. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, March 20th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Chris Weinstein, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
For decades, people have been fleeing the East African country of Sudan. It's been torn apart by civil war, ethnic strife, and human rights abuses. It seemed in 2011 that things were getting better when South Sudan separated into a different country. But in just the past few weeks and months, new conflict has renewed. Why does this matter to us in Omaha? Because other than Sudan itself, more Sudanese live in Omaha than anywhere else in the world. Thousands of refugees seeking a peaceful home have found it right here. Our guest today will speak about the challenges they have faced and what they think the future holds. Please welcome our guests today. And speaking first, Lacey Studnicka.
Hi, thank you so much for welcoming us here today. I'm just going to give you just a brief background about Lutheran Family Services and the work that we do with refugees. And then I'll introduce the main event, which is our guests here. At Lutheran Family Services, we're a human care organization that's been around for 122 years. And we started with orphanages, and now we have expanded our services statewide. We are in three main areas of competency that we serve. We have children's services, which serves, we do foster care and adoption, early childhood preventive services, and we're statewide with that. And then we have a very large behavioral health network as well. And then we have community services, which serves exclusively refugees and immigrants, and we do this statewide as well. Our real bread and butter for our refugee services is we are a resettlement agency. And so we welcome refugees from all over the world. Last year alone, we welcomed 477 refugees to Omaha. But we've been doing this for years, and we have worked for a long time with the Sudanese population, especially about 10 years ago when there was a really big arrival numbers from South Sudan, all the ethnic groups, the Lost Boys. In our resettlement services, we provide new hope for refugees. A refugee is a person who is persecuted and is forced to leave their home country. And so once they make it to a second country, they can seek refuge with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And sometimes we see folks living in various camps around the world for sometimes up to 20 years. So when they finally can come to Omaha and come to the U.S., we try to just help get their lives back in order, help find jobs, help them get Social Security cards. They are on a path to citizenship. And so it's really just helping them achieve that self-sufficiency and welcome that and safety and hope that they've been really searching for. So we're really honored to be a part of that process. We have a variety of services beyond our resettlement services. We also offer extensive employment and education programs, helping refugees find work, as well as accessing education and ESL classes. We also have the International Center of the Heartland, which is able to serve refugees, immigrants, asylees, and victims of human trafficking sort of indefinitely, and that's a program through the United Way. And so we see a lot of folks coming through those doors. I think last year was near 1,800 people. So those services are much needed and growing. And then we also have two immigration attorneys on site. So in our office, we really have a holistic approach in creating a welcoming community for our newest neighbors. And so I'm really excited. I wanted to give you an overview of sort of what those services are when refugees come to Omaha. And we have Sabit Bullis here, and he's the chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society, and he is going to just share about, you know, the Sudanese have been in the States for 15, 20 years, some of them, and really what is happening now, 15, 10, 15 years later, and how does his organization address some of the needs that happens 10, 15 years after resettlement. And he'll also talk about the conflict in South Sudan and how does that affect our families that are living here in Omaha. And then we have Christine Ross, who will speak after Sabit. Christine has her master's degree in public health, and she works at Lutheran Family Services in our health program, but she is a majorly important community leader. She is very much involved throughout the community, being an advocate and a voice for Sudanese women and that community. So I would just like to pass it to Sabit, and you can share with us about what you do.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sabit Bullis. I'm the chairman of South Sudan Civil Society in Omaha, Nebraska. Christine Ross, she is the vice chairman. I have Pastor James, he's a board of directors. Stephen Majok is a public affairs down there. And James Warrock, he's the secretary general and commerce for media. South Sudan Civil Society, established in 2010 by the Southern Sudanese in Omaha, Nebraska, and it's a nonprofit organization. And we partner to work with those of our Lutheran Church, Lutheran Service, and South Sudan Community Association. Our organization is non-political. It's established for the need of South Sudanese community in Omaha and driven by commitment of forming a strong South Sudanese community in the state of Nebraska. To meet the growing needs of the community, our organization is dedicated to education, educating the members of our community about American cultures and how the institutions function, though making them actively involved in issues of the public concern. The organization serves as solely in volunteer involvement. Major event organized by the South Sudan Civil Society. Since the inception of South Sudan Civil Society, we hold many political rallies, bring awareness about the difficulties and which we are facing and implementing the comprehensive peace agreement formally before the South Sudan get it independent. We're lobbying to make Omaha one of the voting centers across the United States, and South Sudanese got their vote in 2011 for the referendum. We organized celebrity parties celebrating the result of the 2011 referendum, organizing many celebrations to celebrate Independence Day, organizing different social forums to discuss the social issue that are facing our members and community, organizing awareness and recognizing party to recognize the graduate. Also, we have a party for our graduate to encourage our student, our youngest one, to sue education, ask for their future to be a productive people in community. The purpose and objective of the South Sudan Civil Society is to promote the peace among our youth and offer them guidance about how to become a productive members of the society, to promote the value of family and education among the members of our community, to facilitate discussion forum about the social issue facing our community, though finding solution to those challenges, to launch several projects designed to helping refugees developing job-related skills, need for securing employment, though achieving economic independence, to assist members of our community, especially new arrival adjusting to new life in America, to provide a forum for South Sudanese Americans to serve their interests and preserve their rich culture, tradition, so they and their children would take a pride in their unique heritage, their knowledge of the mother language, and their bilingual experience. To realize these objectives, we plan to establish the community centers that serve as a venue for our to need to meet and discuss issues of concern to our community. Some of the program that will be provided by the proposed community center would be as different sport activities for the youth in summertime, after school program, especially services and ESL classes, civic and citizenship classes, parenting classes, and many more. And also we have a partner we started with, Boys Town, so that it can help to educate parenting education about the problem that they face, and then we can educate some or train some of our members of community to be the partner to adopt the kids so that they can be closer to their culture. After South Sudan Civil Society, I'll give you a historical background of the Sudan. In Sudan, 3000 BC, there were three known kingdoms in Sudan, which is Amerawi and Nubian Kingdom. That was before the inter of Arab in 641 AD. The establishment of the Islamic regime and system in northern part of Sudan, which had been through all the government, which led, and in 1820, most parts of Sudan fell under the Anglo-Egyptian condominium. In 1855 to 1898, the Mahdi state was established. 1899 to 1955, South Sudan is under joint British-Egyptian rule. In 1955, the first civil war started before, that's when the South Sudanese took arm. And in 1972, the Addis Ababa Peace Agreement signed between the government and Anyanya movement, putting the end to first bloody civil war. As a result, of southern part of country becomes autonomous region. 1983, the civil war restarted again under the South Sudan People Liberation Army. 2005 was a help from the U.S. 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in Nairobi, Kenya, ending the two decades of Second Civil War. 2011, January 9, the South Sudan became an independent country. 2003, the president first has long service and his duty dissolved all the entire cabinet. 2013, December 15, the heavy fighting broke out in the capital, Juba, and the government has accused his own party and former vice president and his colleagues of a failing military coup. Our position as a civil society here in Omaha is really, it's really actually a heartbreak for our Republic of South Sudan to experience the violence with this magnitude, just 2 years after the independence. As such, we committed to effort led by the Intergovernmental Authority and Development, which is IGAD, to bring about peace and stability to South Sudan. Also, we'd kindly like to ask the international community, led by United States, to serve to support the regional effort to bring peaceful solution to current conflicts. We strongly believe that to realize peace in South Sudan, the following measures need to be immediately taken. The Inter-Authority on Development, the IGAD, need to be supported in its efforts to mediate the peace talk between the rebels and the government, pursuing the warring parties to immediately cease the fighting and to protect the innocent civilians caught up in the conflict areas, pressuring and warning the parties to restore peace talk as the only peaceful means to settle their political difference. And in order to realize everlasting peace, the civil society organization and church leaders need to be allowed to participate in the peace talk. Thank you very much. Also, a part of the activities of the civil society was partnering with the University of Nebraska Medical Center, Community Health Education Season with Sudanese community. Also, we have on Saturday, also we have March 22nd, Omaha Church of Faith Arabic on 21st, 100 South 51st Street at Center Road at 3 p.m. We're having a topic to educate our people on diabetic and hypertension management, and that will be at 3 p.m. as a part of the activities that we do to community.
Wonderful. Christine, do you want to go ahead and talk about some of the issues that are facing Sudanese families once they're here?
Thank you. My name is Christine. My name is Christine Ross, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what is happening, and I'm going to concentrate more on the women's side. Not being biased, but just to be a voice. The Sudanese women are very hardworking women. Way back home, they have a lot of chores to do, and they carry that work ethic and bring it back here, bring it to the United States as they came. They work so hard, and they are very good housekeepers, and they care about their children. I know there's a lot going on in the community, but the women do care a lot about their children. When I was in the camp, the main thing when asked, why are people coming to the United States? Why do they want resettlement? Majority of the parents were like, we want to give our children the best life, education, like we didn't get when we were back in South Sudan. So their idea of coming here is to see the best for their children. And so they work so hard on doing that. But with integration has its own problem, and that really affects them. I'll talk to that a little later. But I wanted to talk about a little bit about the independence of South Sudan and its effect on the people who live here in the United States. It is a very good thing. Everybody's so excited, especially the Sudanese we're very excited about independence. We love that we have our own country, a country we can call our own, not being a second citizen to a country. But with that, it brought some issue, which is may seem small, but it is huge impact. One of it is like the able men who are good, educated, and they had family here. With the independence of South Sudan, they decided to go help the country, which is a good thing. They wanted to go and give support to the new country. But what happened is that them moving back to South Sudan leaves the women and the children here. So then that takes away some of the support that the women and the children need. And with that, some financial support is missing, so now you have a single household where the mother, maybe with 8 children, have to work and provide and still take care of the children. It's a huge burden to majority of the women. and here they will tell you, okay, you can file for child support. But when somebody's in another country, far away, how do you get that support? So a lot of women, it's a not only an Omaha issue, it's a nationwide issue for South Sudanese women. And they really don't know where to turn to. Is this a problem? They may think, oh, it's not a problem, but it is really a problem. Because this has resulted into lack of a male figure in the house, and that caused some children to act out. And because of that, the one parent cannot control all of them, and it has led some children to really be in big trouble. because the mother has to get out and go work, then rely on some older children in the house to take care of the others. But some of the children are not as responsible, and that also has led a little bit part of like some kids being taken away because of lack of parental supervision, because we have only one parent trying to, make everything work, and she's looking at, do we have roof over our head? Do I have food to feed the children? Are the children dressed? She's looking at those, and then the supervision is not at her front table at that time, and it becomes a real big issue. But also with the independence of South Sudan, it really one thing that I wanted to mention was during the war, majority of our family were in the camps. And so we have to not only support our family here, but we also support the people back home. So we have to work even the little money and share. But with the independence of the country, we were happy because our parents went back home. Those who cultivate, those who have land to cultivate, were cultivating. So at least they have food. Not like when in the camp, you don't know when it's coming, you don't know how much is coming. So we were worried about that. So that helped us. It reduced the support that was constantly going back home. It diverted it a little bit into a different direction, which is helpful for the people here. Also, when the war was going on, before the independence, we didn't know the direction the country is going. So there was that worry. You're worrying about resettling here. You have your issue here of how to assess, to maneuver the system here. And also you have that to worry about your people back home. What's happening with them? What's their future? What, you know, you have that. But with the independence of the country, brought that peace of mind, and it really helped a lot of people because without that, before the independence, there was a lot of people almost going crazy, mental issue, depression, because it's not only the issue here, they have the burden back from home as well to carry. But we are so, like, really upset about what is going on right now because we thought we were over that. But now that this is happening, we just pray that the world will work with us and bring peace once again to South Sudan for everybody. It's not only about the people living in South Sudan, it's the people living in the diaspora as well. We need that peace. We need for us to function well here. We need peace back at home as well. So, I was also going to mention a little bit the issue building up with the women in the South Sudan community. When we came, some of us came in the 90s, some came in the early 2000s, and then as we were asked to go to work. And at that time, there was plenty of job. And we could get job easily. And so people went to work and concentrate and work so hard to, you know. But when the economy crashed, people were laid off. People realized then that, oh, now I need a GED to get the same job that I just left, that I was laid off from. And I didn't. And they could have worked there 10 years. But now, after 10 years, you realize, oh, to go back to that same work, you need a GED. You need to know how, you're going to have to go and apply on the computer. And you didn't take the time to learn the computer at that time. So it becomes a really huge problem. So with the women and their men gone back, and now there are also some who are struggling to find job, it has really, really taken toll on a lot of women. And it's really, we don't know, we don't know who is to help us with these issues, but we need some help. We need some support from the general population and to help these women because they're really struggling and it's affecting not only them, the children being taken out to foster care, and that alone is also causing some mental because now it's a different system. It's a, you know, so it's a real big issue. So, and that is all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we have a lot of wonderful questions, and if you have more questions, Gary will pick them up and bring them up here. Are Sudanese here? There's several questions on immigration status, I guess we'd say, and one of them is, are the Sudanese here wishing to become citizens, and how does that process take place, I guess?
Yes, most of the Sudanese who have been here actually are already American citizens. Some of them are residents. and doing all their best to become a citizen because of this problem. Even those who went back home to help, they were American citizens. They went to promote, to help the new coming emerging country to support them. But unfortunately, it was heartbreaking when this war break up again. And that's why we're urging all our leaders and politicals of the country to come together, because that's what we expect. Because when we fought for this war, we were fighting for the independent freedom right of the civilian. So most of the Sudanese here are actually American citizens.
So as far as the process, refugees actually are not allowed to return to their home country until they gain citizenship. And so those that have gone back are all American citizens. What happens is because the president every year does what's called a determination and determines how many refugees from all around the world will be allowed into the U.S. every year. And that number is about 70,000. Omaha gets a portion of that. When they arrive, they have the same rights as all of us, except they can't vote. So they get Social Security cards, they're authorized to work, and they're on a path to citizenship. After 1 year, they can apply for their green cards, and after 5 years, they can apply for citizenship. And we really encourage all of our refugee families to get their citizenship at that five-year mark. So a lot of these families are American citizens.
Now, does the South Sudan allow joint citizenship, say, for the men that are going back home?
Yes, for the emerge, because they need actually help for those who are a citizen. They maintain their citizenship, but they can go and help to work but not in a political issue, but they can work for development with organization to support the country. But those who are born there, because they were born there, they can get their citizenship too, because they were born there. Except I don't know about those who were not born there, but those who are born already have the certificate of birth. But
you mentioned how many of the Sudanese here are helping their families in the Sudan. And I guess we'd like to know if you might share a little bit about your families that are still in your home country, and are you trying to bring them here? Do you want to bring them here? Do you want to address that, Christine?
Right now, I still have my mother, my sister, and my other relative aunts and uncles in South Sudan. They don't think they want to come over here. No, I think they were excited about the independence, and they want to be home, and they kind of like it there. And because I remember this is directly from my father, when I wanted him to come, he said, "I'm too old to travel, so I am better off here." And my mother was here for 5 years, and then there is this worried in the older generation to die in a foreign country, and that was huge for her. So she kept pushing to go back. Now that she went back, she's happy that she's at least she can be buried in her land, in her own land. So there is that worry for older generation, you know. But the younger generation, they're excited about the country because now they want to make a change. They really want to participate in this political issues that are really breaking people down, but people were so excited to go back and be part of the new country and make it better.
What about religious issues? Has that been any kind of problem here in the States for the refugees? Are you probably weren't Lutherans in Sudan, were you? Are you now? I don't know.
Well, I think it's interesting to note really quickly that at Lutheran Family Services, I think it's less than 10% of the people that we serve are Lutheran, so that's the misconception.
With regard to the religion, we don't have any issue or problem with the religion, because most of us are Christian. Some of them, they believe in Christianity, some who are Muslim, maybe 2 or 3%. And with the religion, we don't have any problem or issues with regard to it.
Which Middle East neighbor of Sudan are the neighbors, do you think, are helping or hindering the peace process?
I'm not following that, actually, but I can give to Warok or Pastor James if they're following, they can answer.
Well, we were asking, like, if there are countries in neighboring Sudan that are hindering the peace process, or do you think it's just internal?
I think.
Would you come up here and speak into the? Okay. We have a radio audience, and we want to make sure that they can hear you too. All right, and if you would say your name, please.
My name is Pastor James. I'm one of the religious leaders in the community here. So I work with the Southern Baptist Convention. And I am a previous vice chairman of Sudanese Council of Churches. And we are I'm the first former chairman of South Sudanese Civil Society, the founder and the former first chairman. About the question, the neighbor's country that are participating in the peace process, Egypt, is one of the countries are participating, and Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda. And as we know, the position of Uganda has been involved in negotiation with the other IGAD country to try to bring peace together for South Sudan. Egypt playing role, and I think also Jordan's and others, Arab country, who've been a part of CPA. In 1995, and also European Union and U.S., those are the countries that have been helping to try to bring South Sudan together and establish the peace and the reconciliation. So this is what I think about it. About this part of religions, South Sudanese who migrate to Omaha, they are everywhere. So you can see them every day in your church, in your neighborhood, in every community. So some are Baptist, some are Lutheran, some are Catholic. So in Sudan, we just have like a three denomination, Episcopal, Presbyterian, and we don't have Baptist before. We have Catholic, but right now, we are everywhere. So you can find us everywhere.
Thank you. How did Omaha come to be the place to move to instead of New York or L.A. or...
Omaha became actually as a place because of the South Sudanese who first came here and settled in Omaha. They liked the city and the environment and the friendly of the people of Omaha and Nebraska for the way they're treating people in South Sudanese. So they invite the other people who are in different states to come down because people of Omaha have an open heart and welcoming people here.
And we have a really great economy too, so there's a lot of job opportunities.
What is the greatest need of a newly resettled person? And are those needs being met, Christine?
A newly resettled person have a lot of needs. Just imagine yourself going for a trip somewhere and with a bag. So, and you're going to live there for how long, you don't know. So there's need for housing, there's need for furniture, there's need for you know, medical help, need for just where to get your documents and social security and all this. And being in a country where you really don't know how to maneuver the system is huge. And also they just need to know how to integrate, and usually their biggest challenge is language. Yeah. You cannot maybe read the sign, you cannot read what is, so it puts a lot of barrier in how you can access the services.
And one of the efforts that we have as well is we have a robust effort to engage church communities, faith communities, businesses to sponsor new families and really provide that friendship and welcome to them. And we find that those relationship building and engaging them with community volunteers really helps new families be successful because they're engaging with people from Omaha who can help them
Lacey, what's involved with that? If someone was listening today or is in the audience and would be interested in becoming involved in that?
Well, we have three levels of sponsorship. The first level is setting up an apartment. So you're getting a church group together, you're gathering furniture. We have a list of all the items that are required to go into a refugee's home. And so it's more of a fellowship activity for your group. It doesn't have to be church. It can be a book club or whoever. And then the second level is the same as the first, you know, setting up a home. And then we invite whoever's interested to welcome the family at the airport when they arrive to the U.S. and share a first meal with them. And then the third level is all of the above, but then we ask that they, and we do a special training, and we ask that the group walk with that family, visiting them once a week for an hour for 3 to 6 months. And it goes beyond that, but that's what we ask them to commit to really be there, be supportive, practice English, help with children, help learn. A lot of, you know, families have never been exposed to the amenities that we, you know, have, whether it's plumbing, electricity, all of those things. So it's just building those relationships and helping people. So we would love to have more folks help.
Well, Christine, you talked earlier about how difficult it is, especially in a single-parent household where a woman may have many children and many mouths to feed. She has to work and leaving maybe older siblings to take care of younger ones at home. What types of problems do your children face? Are there difficulties specifically in getting along with African-American young people as well? I know I've personally read articles about gang issues with the Sudanese. They're finding it hard to fit in?
There are different issues that it's hard to bring it together mm-hmm. or pinpoint and say, this is it. But I do know that me being one of them, my husband left and went to South Sudan, and I'm taking care of my three kids, and I know that it is how hard from my experience, and I can double that with people, other people who have more children than I do, and I see it in the community. But with the interaction with the Black Americans, it's just, I think it's a miscommunication or misunderanderstanding. The Sudanese and then South Sudanese, generally Sudanese, because we also have the Darfurians going through this, not understanding, you know, the South, the Black Americans society and how they do their things, because we are new into these things and they have been here or longer. And they also look at us and think maybe they don't understand us. There's that maybe bringing it together and educating each other about each culture will help whatever friction that is going on will really neutralize that. But it's just that we don't understand the other system and the culture, and they don't understand our mm-hmm. culture. We just don't understand each other. And I've met and talked to a lot of other Black American community, and also I think I participated in one of their radio show that they wanted more of that because they really don't understand. According to the newsman, he said, well, we need more of that. We need more education. So there's that need for the education between the two cultures so that it neutralizes the friction that is going on for the young ones.
Mm-hmm. Are there problems, in supervising after school? I mean, in general, for the young people, are there enough programs in Omaha to become involved in without getting into, you know, most teenagers try to find trouble, I guess.
There could be some programs. Some program demands that you pay, and, you know, a single household or just a struggling family would not be able to afford to pay for that after-school program so that they can take the kids too. And some of them, they don't know that it's not well advertised. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think I don't see a lot of information, or I have not come across a lot of information advertising that we have this after-school program, if it's a free one or affordable one or some support, you know. So a lot of the people don't know about programs. Even that the financial issue is also a huge one, because there are others that that they could really take their kids in, but they just, you know, they cannot afford it. So there's also need to have that cultural geared program so that it doesn't only address that, it also addressed how the children, how the parents are parenting here, the South Sudanese parent, how do they parent, and how the kids to understand the way the parenting is different from what the teacher is telling them and what is really going on. So there's that clash between two cultures. You have the American system that you're being told from school that this is how things are supposed to be, and you go home, you're totally in a different country and you different system. And so bringing it after school and also having Sudanese elders working with this group to educate them so that they can really manage to see how this, to figure out how these two cultures can work together for their good.
Well, we just had a question, and how do you do that? How do you maintain your culture and still fit into the community? I know, Sabat, you said you're part of that organization that helps to bring the culture together.
Moroccan. Can I answer that question?
Okay.
Give him a chance, yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
All right, just say your name, please. And
okay. My name is Peter Warrock. I'm Secretary General of South Sudanese Civil Society. First of all, I would like to thank the state of Nebraska for hosting us here, especially in Omaha. Omaha, it has been a second home for us. Going to the question that was asked, before I answer it, there is a comment that I would like to add to what Sister Rose said in regarding to challenges that facing the families raising their kids and youth. And in regard to the youth issue, and I think that most of our people who came here, some of them, they don't have education background. So when they come here, they don't have a skill to find a job that pay good. So they work a labor job. And labor job because given the economic situation here, two parents sometimes they work most of the time. That being said, so when the children go to school and they come back, some parents, they will not be there for their kids to help them. Either because they are away at work or because they don't have ability to help them in reading and other stuff. And also because the American system is not that simple. It's complicated. You need a knowledge to navigate your way through. And without education, without knowledge, the parent will not be able to know where to go and seek the help. We propose in South Sudan Civil Society to have a community center. And one of the issues that we are going to tackle in that community center is after school program, is mentoring. Because in our community, yes, we have been here long enough, and some of us took opportunity to go to school and to graduate. I graduated from University of Nebraska. I majored in biotechnology, and then I went to Clarkson College, and I pursue my master's degree in healthcare administration. And I'm hoping to further my education. And there's Brother Majuktu, he goes to Bellevue University, and also Pastor James, and also Brother Komaj, and Brother Sabit is graduated from India too. And Sister Rose, you heard, she graduated from public health. So we have people that could help, but we need a center that they could come and mentor these children, because we know that some of the problem that our children face is mentoring. As Sister Rose said before, sometimes because of the family issues, there is a lot of the father went back home, and the mothers are the one taking care of the children, and there is not like someone to monitor, to mentor these young people. That's why we said that it will be good if to establish a community center for us to do this kind of program and also to engage our parents in terms of parenting classes, because as Sister Rose said before, because when parents come here, they come up, they already grew up, and they also they want their children to they want to transfer their culture to their children, but they didn't know that like different country has a different culture, and also this our kids here, they have become Americanized, so they are not clicking with each other. So that's why we want to have a parenting class, so we could communicate, we could facilitate the communication between the parent and their kids.
That's right. And we tell a lot of our new refugees when they arrive, when they're going through cultural orientation as well, that you're going to be raising American kids, mm-hmm. and you kind of have to prepare for raising American kids and be prepared for that. Maybe when a refugee camp, you've had access to just a small ration of food. Well, your kids aren't going to want to eat that. They're going to want pizza and tacos. And so just, you know, learning that is difficult.
How many Sudanese here in Omaha do you think desire to go back? Are you thinking?
All of them. Everyone wants to go home, right?
Majority of most of them, like especially those who already their kids are growing up, they trying to go back to help and support mm-hmm. our people back home there. That's what the main thing. That's when we came here, get educated. Like for example, I went back to South Sudan after 28 years. I left in 1985, mm-hmm. and didn't see my mother till I went back 2013 on April. Wow. And unfortunately, she passed away on December during this conflict. But after 28 years, just imagine, when I went home, I was like a foreigner in that country, because most of people don't know. Those who grow up after me, the cities were looking different. So what we're doing, like, we need to establish ourselves here so we can also help to boost and make peaceful and educate our people back home there, to give them back what we have got from them before. And also, as American here, we have to also to pursue our education and contribute also to be a productive member of the community. That's why we formed the civil society, to educate our people, that they pursue education, to take them out from the street, especially our youth. And the problem was, like they mentioned, most of the parents go to work. And those kids, when they're at home, they do whatever they do, because especially the elder one, some of them may sneak out with their friends and start think that's American life, but they go to a wrong direction. And that's the very important thing, that most of our parents who came here, their background of education is very poor. Most of them are not educated. Even the kids, when they go to school, they may even don't attend some schools. But when the letters come to the mail, just guess who opened the letter? It's the same kids with their mother will give them the letter to read it. And if it's something about them, they'll not tell the truth to the family. And that's why most of them end out, and the family will not realize till after 2 or 3 years. That's why we ask the Omaha Public School to hire some from the Southern Sudanese to help with the issue, to address the issue. If there's any conflict, they can go directly to the family. We have a lot of people who are bilingual. And most of us here, like Pastor James and I, we speak more than 4 languages. And those are languages within Southern Sudan. So that's a rule that we can do to explain to them exactly what they have to do and make the process and follow up and even educate family about the parenting. Like Kristen mentioned it earlier, that's our obligation, that's what we're looking forward, and that's why we need the support from the community here to have a center that will be able to provide services to our needy people, so that if we minimize the crime or the problem that we have in community, it minimizes the problem that the city of Omaha have. And when we have a safe environment and community, it makes safe environment for the city of Omaha and the state of Nebraska too.
Just to add on a little, for the women that I've talked to going back to South Sudan, they know it's still a young country. They really would love to go back, but they also realize that being a young country, they don't have a well-established educational system. And so they're thinking about their children. What am I doing taking them there? And they're going to lose all this education that they have studied here. So majority are saying, no, I'm going to wait until they get to college, and then I'm free, yeah. and then I can go. So,
I guess our last question would be for you, Lacey. Is there a number that people could call if they would like to find out more information about ways that they could become involved?
Yes, absolutely. Our number is 402-346-6100. Right. And just ask for me.
All right. Thank you, Lacey.
I have addition for the numbers also. Numbers. We have the numbers for the South Sudan Civil Society. Our address is on 2100 South 51st Street. And you can call 402-671-4349, or you can call 402-321-1801 or 660-528-0920.
All right, thank you very much. And I'd like to thank our guests, Christine Ross, Sabit Bolis, and Lacey Studnicka, for participating in today's forum. And also like to thank our listening audience at KIOS Radio. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a talk by two Sudanese refugees, Christine Ross and Sabit Bolis. They were joined by Lacey Studnicka from Lutheran Family Services, the largest resettlement organization in Nebraska. The title of their presentation was Challenges of Relocating from the Sudan. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, March 20th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, May 29th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Jeffrey Gold, the new chancellor of the University of Nebraska Medical Center. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.